Thank you, Brother Dan. It's good to see you all tonight. It's always a pleasure to come here and to see your faces, to fellowship. You think about it, how blessed we are to have this opportunity to just to sit and visit and just to fellowship and renew those bonds that we need to renew. I was going to begin with sending you greetings from everyone out there in nice, cool Colorado, and invite you all out to nice, cool Colorado. But after the last week, it's not bad here. I gotta admit, this is not the Missouri I remember for this time of year. But believe it or not, I didn't come to talk about the weather. I do have some thoughts that I would like to bring to you. I'm going to begin in the book of Daniel, the first chapter. And I'm going to start with the first verse. It says, "In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, unto Jerusalem, and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand with part of the vessels of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar to the house of his God. And he brought the vessels into the treasure house of his God." Just to lay some foundation, I enjoy history. And I think it's also important to understand the time we're talking about here in Daniel. For some frame of reference, this is when the kingdoms were there's a northern kingdom and a southern kingdom. The northern kingdom had already been carried away captive. They had gone off into idolatry, and the Assyrians had come along and carried them off captive. And we still look for their return. And it was after that that the Babylonian Empire came up, and as it grew, it conquered the Assyrian Empire. And I find it interesting that that this Babylon, when you think of Babylon, how many times in the scriptures does it refer to Babylon? And it's always a spiritual sense. In the Revelation, it's talking about, come out of Babylon and all those kinds of things. Babylon only lasted a fairly short time. It really only existed from right before the captivity of Jerusalem until right before the return, for that 70 years or so. It's really weird. It's like God had set aside that people to accomplish his purposes. But that's the time we're talking about. So Nebuchadnezzar came at about 605 B.C., about the same time that Lehi and his family left Jerusalem. So that's the time we're talking about. So Nebuchadnezzar came to Jerusalem and besieged it. Do you ever think about what it was like to be in Jerusalem, being sieged? But by being sieged, that means they surround the whole city and starve it out until they finally give up. We can't take it anymore. We're starving. We don't have enough food. We don't have enough water. All those kinds of things. And so finally, Jerusalem fell. And that's where we are right now in this story. It says, "And the king spake unto Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, that he should bring certain of the children of Israel, and of the king's seed, and of the princes, children in whom was no blemish, but well favored, and skillful in all wisdom and cunning in knowledge and understanding science, and such that had ability to stand in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the learning and the tongue of the Chaldeans. And the king appointed them a daily provision of the king's meat and of the wine which he drank, so nourishing them 3 years, that at the end thereof they might stand before the king. Now among these were the children of Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael,
and Azariah.
This is a familiar story. This is stuff we read about in the primary class in Sunday school. It's Daniel and the three Nephites, and so we understand that part of the story. But what I want you to understand is what their true experience was. We have in our humanness, we kind of have our imaginary thing about how we think it was like, because the pictures in the kids' books never look quite realistic. They always have big eyes. But these kids, but really, we're talking teenagers. That's who was carried away captive to be to teach them. And if you think about it, you remember the Assyrians were powerful, and the Babylonians grew rapidly. And so they had to try to rule all this land that they'd conquered. Well, they didn't have enough Babylonians to do it. There wasn't enough people that they could put in places to run the place. It was so big. And so they would take these kids that they thought they'd be able to teach. And what they were doing was reprogramming. If you think about it, they were reprogramming. They took them 1,000 miles from their birthplace, separated them from their country, separated them from their families, and changed their names. Took away everything that said, "I'm a Hebrew." They immersed them in the ways of the Babylonians so that they could be taught to serve the king. And they took away everything of their heritage to say, "This is who you are." Because they wanted to remake them so that they could be useful. If they weren't useful to the kingdom, they weren't worth living. They were captives. So they separated them, they changed their names, they immersed them in this culture. And when we think of Babylon, it was a completely idolatrous culture. It was all pagan. And we think about our world today, we have nothing to compare to it. There was nothing about God in Babylon. There was nothing there for them. And they taught them. You know, I don't think they were having Sunday school lessons. They weren't teaching them about God. They were teaching them about astrology and astronomy, enchantments. And in the fifth verse, they gave them the daily provision of the king's meat. Remember, these teenagers had been starving in Jerusalem. And now they're taken to this huge palace and given them whatever they want. Whatever the king was having, that's what they were having. It's kind of tempting. You think about it. You could hardly imagine, you could hardly imagine a bunch of young people being thrown into greater temptation. You really couldn't. It'd be like dropping them off in New York City with no supervision. They didn't have any parents. Maybe that was the good thing to them. But they didn't have anybody to give them direction. They were on their own. I'm going to continue on there in the seventh verse. It says, "Unto whom the prince of the eunuchs gave names, for he gave unto Daniel the name of Belteshazzar, and Hananiah of Shadrach, and Mishael of Meshach, and to Azariah of Abednego." Once again, they changed their identity. They wanted them to forget they were Hebrews. But then we come to the eighth verse. And if you don't remember anything else tonight, remember the eighth verse, okay? says, "But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank." Here's this young man, 1,000 miles from home, no supervision, given free reign of the entire kingdom. But he made a decision. He resolved. He made a stand. He purposed in his heart. You know, this was early on in his life. We don't know what the first teen years, or, you know, umpteen years were of his life were like. Growing up in Jerusalem, assumedly. Learned something about God, assumedly. But remember why Jerusalem was conquered? It wasn't because they were worshiping God. It's because they'd left God and gone into idolatry. But, you know, knowing Daniel's story, it's obviously he didn't. But he had to deal with the consequences of his nation. And, you know, he was at a time in his life that, you know, it's lives of people are not always, but often they're made or they're ruined in that teenage time of your life. You face crossroads and you face huge decisions that you either enjoy the benefits of for the rest of your life or deal with the consequences of the rest of your life. But it's the perfect time to build that foundation. And remember, it was pretty difficult to turn down. If you can put yourself in that position, you got the best food in the world. It would be, trying to bring it to modern time, it would be a barbecued pulled pork sandwich with sweet potato fries. And high boy, oh yeah, it's high boy. It's the best pizza in the river. They had the best chefs, and there was nothing that they couldn't have. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine he drank. Therefore, he requested of the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. I like the way that it's recorded there. He requested of the prince of the eunuchs. Daniel made a stand. He resolved. He purposed in his heart. He wasn't going to do that. But he didn't do it like, "I'm Daniel and I'm making a stand." He requested humbly to be allowed not to defile himself. And I think that was, you know, it says that later on that God had brought Daniel into favor and tender love with the prince of the eunuchs because of his attitude. And the prince of the eunuchs said unto Daniel, "I fear my lord the king, who hath appointed your meat and drink. For why should he see your faces worse liking than the children which are of your sort? Then shall you make me endanger your head to the king." So Daniel's saying, "Don't make me defile myself." And the prince of the eunuchs is going, "If you look like you're not doing very well, I'm going to get killed." Because he's going to be thinking, "I'm taking all of the food and selling it for my own purposes." So the eunuch was scared. He was trying to do his job. Then said Daniel to Melzar, whom the prince of the eunuchs had set over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, "Prove thy servants, I beseech thee, 10 days, and let them give us pulse to eat and water to drink. Then let our countenances be looked upon before thee, and the countenance of the children that eat of the portion of the king's meat, and as thou seest, deal with thy servants." So we're back to that banquet of temptation. That he could have had anything he wanted. Prime rib. Chocolate. He wouldn't have had, but we could. And Daniel said, no, I'll take a plate of spinach. Lima beans. That's what Paul says, it's just vegetables mushed up. Because all that, those foods, you know, Daniel was a Hebrew. He followed the law of Moses. He couldn't eat a pulled pork sandwich. He couldn't eat things that were been sacrificed to an idol, which probably it was. There were things that, you know, it wasn't prepared in the right manner. And so he resolved not to do that because of his moral principle. He wasn't going to cross that line. I can imagine that other Hebrew children did. All we have a record of is these four. I don't imagine they just took four. And they had other people from other countries and civilizations that they did this with as well. Just because other people are doing it, does it make it right? No. And remember, adding to this temptation that was before them, who was selected to go to Babylon? The brightest and the best, right? The ones who were well favored. The ones that were skillful in wisdom. It'd be like someone saying, you know what? You're special. You know, you are the best of the best. Come with us. How often does flattery work? A lot. It really does. It works. You know what? You're special. You know what? You are just so beautiful. And what does it make people feel? Especially teenage boys. You are special. You're awesome. Well, I guess I kind of am. I'm cool. But Daniel said, I'm still not going to. I'm not going to step away from my moral principles. I'm not crossing that line. You know, you can rationalize things. I'm 1,000 miles away from home. You know, I'm a prisoner. It's not like I get to choose what I get to do. God would understand, right? Daniel purposed in his heart. He made a stand. You know, if you think about it, what was Daniel willing to give up? He was willing to give up his life. Because what would have happened if things didn't work out the way we understand that they worked out? You know, he was going from living in the king's house, eating the king's food, to either being killed or sent off with the other captives. And that's one of those big lies of Satan. It's huge. That if you don't compromise on whatever this moral issue is, you know, you're going to lose your job. You're going to lose your position. You're going to lose your popularity. You won't be one of the cool kids anymore. Remember, these guys are special. And if they make that stand, they're not going to be special anymore. They won't be popular. They'll lose their friends. But Daniel purposed in his heart not to defile himself. So, we know the story, but I'm going to read it anyway. 14th verse. So he consented to them in this matter and proved them 10 days. And at the end of 10 days, their countenances appeared fairer and fatter in flesh than all the children which did eat the portion of the king's meat. Thus Melzar took away the portion of their meat and the wine that they should drink and gave them pulse. Yum. He proved God. He was willing to make a stand, and God blessed him. And that was the foundation of his character. Continuing on, and as for these four children, God gave them knowledge and skill in all learning and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. God gave it to them. He's the one that they were given all this instruction about Babylon and how Babylon was supposed to be run, but God is the one who gave them the understanding and knowledge. Now at the end of the days that the king had said he would bring them in, then the prince of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. And the king communed with them, and among them all was found none like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore stood they before the king. And in all matters of wisdom and understanding that the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers that were in his realm. And Daniel continued even into the first year of King Cyrus. Daniel made a stand, and God cared for him and blessed him. To set that foundation for his character. He was willing not to compromise his moral principles. And you know what? Like I said, it's the foundation, because this sets it up for all of them. We know the other stories. What happens to the 3 Hebrew children? Okay? Won't read all of it. 3rd chapter of Daniel. 1st verse, Nebuchadnezzar the king made an image of gold whose height was 3 score cubits and the breadth thereof 6 cubits. And he set it in the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. We know the story, how you... Every time you heard the music, you had to go pray to this image, right? But what about those 3 Hebrews? Eighth verse. Wherefore at that time certain Chaldeans came near and accused the Jews. And they spake and said to the king of Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. Thou, O king, hast made a decree that every man that shall hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and dulcimer, and all kinds of music shall fall down and worship the golden image. And whoso falleth not down and worshipeth, that he should be cast in the midst of a burning fiery furnace. There are certain Jews whom thou hast set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not regarded thee. They serve not thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. They made a stand. They were not going to do something that was contrary to their moral principles. So what happens? They get thrown in, right? And their attitude in the 17th verse says, if it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thine hand, O king. But if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. They would not cross that line. So they threw him in, we know. And the ones who made the accusation and eventually were killed. And they were blessed. They were promoted in the kingdom. We know Daniel, you know what? We started talking about teenagers. Well, guess what? I'm not talking to a bunch of teenagers. This was the foundation of his character, though, of these four individuals. We know the story of Daniel in the lion's den, right? That nobody was allowed to pray. But what did Daniel do? He was not going. He made a stand. He wasn't going to compromise his moral principles. He was going to continue to worship God. He wasn't making a big show of it, but he was willing to continue in his worship. How old do you think Daniel was when he got thrown in the lion's den? When in reality, when you look at it, Darius was the king. This was 66 years later. So Daniel was an old man, at least as old as Joel. He was pushing 75, 80. His entire life, he would not compromise his principles. He made a stand. It all goes back to that original decision in the first chapter of Daniel. He purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. You know, do you ever think about what it would be like to get thrown into a fiery furnace or into a lion's den? Would you begin to waver? Honestly. Or could you make that stand? You know, would you be afraid? I probably would be in some way. Doesn't sound like a pleasant way to go. But don't let that sensation of fear convince you that you don't have courage. But if you didn't have the fear, you wouldn't need courage. And fear is not a sign of cowardice. It's just an emotion. But we got to be willing to make a stand. You know, this is talking about Babylon. And from what I understand, our brother Donald spoke about coming out of Babylon. And we're all familiar with the scriptures and in Revelation about coming out of Babylon. Daniel was taken captive into Babylon. You know, he didn't really have a choice physically to come out of Babylon. He was stuck. He was a prisoner. And you can't help but look at our society these days and say, well, are we getting carried away captive into Babylon? Or are we just kind of, our nation just kind of evolving into Babylon? And how much power do we have to change the course of our nation? I don't know. The Lord's in control of nations. But regardless of our circumstances, we can make a stand. In our modern society, social change is pushed through the word tolerance. We must have tolerance. Well, tolerance means that I'm willing to tolerate your opinions. You know, I don't agree with it, but you have the freedom to do that. But that's not what the world's definition of tolerance means. They want you to accept. They want you to say it's not sin. Whatever the agenda is, that's different. You know, and the common phrase is, oh, don't judge me. But then what do? they judge you. If you make a stand, you will be labeled. You'll be called a bigot. You'll be called all kinds of things, I'm sure. But we need to be able to make that stand on moral principles. On anything. It's easy to say, well, he's talking about homosexuality. That's one thing. It's not the only thing out there in the world that's dangerous to our souls. But as soon as we compromise our moral principles, as soon as we say, well, it's not that big a deal, we've lost our protection from God. Daniel was willing to make that stand. And God blessed him. If we hold to a moral principle, like I said, we're going to be called names. We may get some bad publicity in the newspaper, on TV, it doesn't matter. You know, if you... In today's society, if you don't drink, if you don't do pot, if you don't have sex before marriage or live together before you get married, just to make sure you're compatible, you're weird. And if you dare believe in creation, you're just plain stupid. Because all the scientists have proven evolution. We know that. Right? I believe that things that will be coming in our future will require us to make a stand on our moral principles that we cannot cross, that we cannot compromise. And we will be labeled. We're already a cult, so it doesn't matter. But you know, it's surprising it does. Because sometimes that's hard. It's hard to make a stand. It takes courage. I want to turn over to Philippians in the first chapter. I'm going to start with the 12th verse. This is Paul talking. It says, I would you should understand, brethren, that the things which have happened unto me have fallen out rather under the furtherance of the gospel, talking about all the things he's had to endure, so that my bonds in Christ are manifest in all the palace and in all other places. And many of the brethren in the Lord, waxing confident by my bonds, are much more bold to speak the word without fear. Brothers and sisters, we need each other. Because when one person is able to make a stand, that emboldens everybody else. It encourages each other. We each have to make that stand individually in our life. But when we make that stand and others see it, they're encouraged. Yeah, me too. I'm going to make that stand. But someone's got to be first. It takes courage to be a Christian. It takes courage to live a clean, moral life in this world, surrounded by immorality everywhere you look. It takes courage to remain true to our convictions when everyone at school, at work, in our neighborhood says you're old-fashioned, strange. You're a religious fanatic. You're weird. It takes courage to be different. You know, I haven't done a whole lot of study about the Amish, What they believe, honestly, I don't know. But it appears to me they're not afraid to be different. Unless then within their community they're afraid to be different, I don't know. But being different is very difficult for some people. We just want to blend in. Don't want to make waves. We don't want to call in an airstrike on our own selves, saying, because if we make a stand, you become the target. Put a big bullseye right there. Nobody wants to do that. It's much easier just to go with the flow. It's not that big a deal. But it is. It really is. And it starts with the decision to stand. A decision that to purpose in our heart to follow God no matter what. To hold, you know, our scriptures are the rod of iron, right? What happens if we let go of the scripture? We're lost. Sometimes the scriptures are inconvenient to our being able to live peaceably sometimes with our neighbors. And so sometimes we take the scriptures and we kind of, we're holding on to them, but we're holding on to them way out here. But if our life depends on it, we should be holding them closer. That whatever they say, we believe and we'll do. Whether whether it's easy or not isn't the matter. But it always takes a time in our lives that we have to make a stand. Moses did it. Moses decided, you know what? He would give up being a prince in Egypt. You know, Joshua had to make a stand. You know, that's where we get the phrase of, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. He made a stand. Nephi made a stand. Moroni made a stand. Each of these individuals made a stand. I want to turn over to Romans chapter 12. First verse says, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. Our lives are not our own. Our bodies are not our own. They become God's. They're His to use. And be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. Renewing our mind, changing the way we think, but not being transformed into the world, or being conformed to the world. Do you look the same as the world? Do you act the same as the world? Do you sound just like the world? Is there any difference? Or have we started to blend and blur that line? Brothers and sisters, we have to dare to be different. We have to be willing to make that stand like Daniel did. We have to purpose in our heart. Be willing to be different at work, at school.
We may have to be different than the rest of our family. Because everything's a test. It's one of those things I've learned in the fire service. Every day is a test. It's not just once or twice in a career. It's every day. It's every time you get on the truck. Every time you go to the grocery store. Every time you show up at work. It's a test. What are you going to do today? School's the same. How are you going to act today? You know, there are consequences for doing nothing. This is not a... If Daniel had not made that stand, we wouldn't be talking about him. There are consequences for not making a stand. But when we look at Daniel and the three Hebrews, there are tremendous blessings. That, you know, Daniel and those three individuals were blessed by God their entire lives. They had difficulties, yes, but they also had tremendous experiences with the Lord. Visions, dreams, interpreting. Can you imagine being able to tell your grandkids, yeah, I was thrown into a fiery furnace? How much would that strengthen your faith? But in order to do that, they had to make a stand. Otherwise, they just coasted downhill like everybody else. It takes courage. It's not easy. But it's worth it. And we don't do it ourselves. We don't do it our own. The Lord blessed Daniel every step of the way. The 121st Psalm. When we're at that crossroads, we're at that moment of decision. First verse says, I will lift up mine eyes into the hills, from whence cometh my help. My help cometh from the Lord, which made heaven and earth. He will not suffer thy foot to be moved. He that keepeth thee will not slumber. You make a stand on your feet, and he will not suffer it to be moved. He will help. He's never asleep. He's never not available. Behold, he that keepeth Israel shall neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord is thy keeper. The Lord is thy shade upon thy right hand. The sun shall not smite thee by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord shall preserve thee from all evil, and shall preserve thy soul. The Lord shall preserve thy going out and thy coming in from this time forth, and even forevermore. That's where our hope is. That's where our help is. But we still have to make the stand. We have a responsibility as well. Oh, did I mention each of us that have been baptized promised God we would? Oh, yeah. Remember Mosiah when it says that you're willing to stand as a witness at all times? In all places and in all things. Oh, you mean we already promised God we would do that? You know, I'm human. And I have failed to do that from time to time. It's uncomfortable. It's not easy. It's not always pleasant. But we also have the avenue of repentance. We have that opportunity to change our life. Even after we've made that covenant, to be able to renew ourselves. Guess what we're going to do tomorrow? We're going to have an opportunity to partake of the sacrament, to renew the covenant that we made. And remember, you know what? I've fallen down on that one. Lord, please forgive me. But I'm committing myself to make a stand. I want to be blessed. I want to enjoy the blessings that you have. You know, the Lord is good. No, He's better than good. He's great. And the blessings that He has for us, you know, you think about it, we want so much for our kids. Nothing but the best. You know, we want them to be happy. We want them to marry the right person and have a good job and have 2.3 kids and the white picket fence and the whole thing. Don't you think God wants that for us? Only 100 times more. All we have to do is obey. To take that stand. To not to compromise our moral principles. Because we will be challenged. We have been challenged. Sometimes we stood up and sometimes we didn't. Sometimes we fell flat on our face. But even if we fall flat on our face, we got to stand back up and make that stand again. Renew ourselves. Renew our desires for Him. I thank you for your time.